Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for iOS Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support.
It's accessory day, and I brought a lot of accessories with
me. Ooh, that's Jason Snell. We'll also be talking about a way to supplement my failing mind.
I'm going to make the case for the 10.5-inch iPad Pro.
And the new iOS is here. It's all coming up next on iOS Today. iOS Today is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/iOS today and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit with their limited time offer. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online. At quickenloans.com/iOS today. Hello!
Hey.
Jason Snell, great to see you.
It's great to be here.
Megan Maroney is the day off. She's traveling, but we are glad to have you, the host of The Incomparable and many other podcasts, and of course, the guy at in charge at SixColors.com, longtime editorial director at IDG. I wanted to ask you.
Yes.
IDG just got sold to a Chinese company.
It did, although one of the guys behind that in China is basically the guy who headed IDG's
China
venture wing and all of that, and he views the IDG founder Pat McGovern as kind of an idol of his. So it couldn't find a better match, I think.
Yeah.
So I think, and it's good for that to be over. It's my colleagues back there. I mean, it's been like a year and a half where they've been in limbo, wondering if they're going to get sold. So
right.
Now it's over.
Right.
So that's good.
Right.
I think it's good.
And the company has deep pockets and will keep the enterprise afloat.
Two big Chinese investment firms buying into it. I think that's a good sign for their future. Compared to maybe somebody else who might have bought it off and sold it up in, you know, sold in pieces.
It's a little weird for us in the U.S. when a Chinese company buys an American company. There's always this fear, like, are they going to start publishing in Chinese? Or, you know, what's going to happen? Is the editorial slant going to change? But it's not, because it's all the same people will be writing it. It's just new people paying the bills.
IDG was always International Data Group. I mean, that was the whole point. Pat McGovern was one of the first American businessmen allowed to invest in China. And so it's been a part of IDG's culture for a long time.
That.
Oh, yeah. He was really a trailblazer. Same in Vietnam, too. So he's that's the legacy that he left to that company. And so I think that it sort of fits. It's always been a company with outposts in lots of different countries. So that I think will continue.
So you're much like me. I left Ziff Davis to do my own thing. You left IDG to do your own thing.
Exactly.
But we still look back with fondness on the old company.
Absolutely. And I have a lot of friends. I mean, most of the people who work in that group, I had a hand in hiring still.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And those are people I think the world of. So
they published Macworld, PC World, Computer World.
Yeah, Info World.
All the worlds.
All the worlds.
I guess the world. Huh?
Tech Hive is in there, which we launched, which is still around.
That's still around. Good.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's IDC, which when you're on Twit, you talk about the
analysts
at IDC.
They're big analysts.
And then IDG Ventures is big. They have a whole venture capital.
Do they still do trade shows? Because they used to do, I mean, they did Macworld Expo and other trade shows.
You know, I don't know. I think they still do events, but I think maybe the big trade show days are over. Although they were running E3 for a while. They may still be doing that. Huh.
Well, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about iOS, the iPod. Is there
the
an iPod anymore?
Yeah, the iPod Touch is still
the
kicking
iPod
around.
Touch, the iPhone, the iPad, the Apple Watch, the Apple TV. And of course, as soon as you sat down, everybody in the chat room said, what is Jason, what is he using? Yep. It kind of looks like a MacBook Air.
Why am I using a laptop here on iOS today? That's madness. Well, this is the Bridge keyboard 12.9. Whoa.
So you have the big iPad Pro, the 12-inch iPad Pro.
I do. This is the 12.9. And this is the bridge keyboard for it, which is, it's matched in space gray here for this one, although it comes in all the same colors as the iPad Pro.
And that
it's a Bluetooth keyboard with this hinge that allows me to use it on my lap or on a table, and I've got full bendability of the screen.
So it really turns it into a laptop.
It turns it into, I'm basically using a 13-inch laptop.
With a detachable screen.
And I can pop this right out. Unlike so many of the keyboard accessories where you end up having to wrestle it in, right, and then wrestle it back out. So really, once it's a laptop, now your iPad is a laptop unless you put a lot of effort in. This, it just has this little hinge with the two clips, and all you really do is pull it out, and it comes right out. So it's very easy to pop it in and pull it back out, which I really like.
So is this your primary laptop now?
Yes, I would say. I do most of my work on a Mac still during the day. I have a big 27-inch iMac. But when I'm out of the office, when I'm in the rest of my house, because I work at home, I am almost always using the iPad. It's
kind of
very
like an
rarely
Air.
A laptop.
It looks a little bit like a MacBook Air.
And most of the time, I don't use the keyboard. Most of the time, it's just got a cover on it. When I'm going to do writing, or if I'm traveling somewhere and I want to, you know, have the ability to write long articles with me, I am trying to bring this instead of a Mac laptop. And this has given me the best laptop experience of any iPad keyboard. A lot of them, they're good keyboards and other accessories out there, but either they're kind of like the Logitech Create for the 12.9.
It's just bulky.
It's bulky and it takes a lot to get it in there.
Yeah. It sure does.
Or you can't balance it. You can't balance it on your lap. You can put it on a table. There are a lot of things that will work on a table, but they won't work in your lap. And that's where this is different, is that this screen is going to stay up. Regardless, it's not leaning. There's no kickstand. It's the weight of the bottom is able to keep the top in the right place.
This is the Bridge keyboard. It's BRYDGE at bridgekeyboards.com. How much?
That's a good question. How much is it? 100 and I'm going to make something up. We should probably
I'm going to guess 130, but
I think it's more than that. It's not cheap for sure.
All right. It's $149.99.
There you go.
Gold is unavailable for U.S., Canada, or Australia.
Well, they're back ordered right now.
but space gray is out of stock for U.S.
Yeah, I'm lucky to have gotten my space gray.
But I think now after this big plug on iOS today, they're going to have to make a few. This is aluminum. I mean, it really is nice. Yeah. I think $149 is a reasonable price for. I mean, wasn't the Apple keyboard case roughly the same price, and then Logitech was even more. It was $189 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I mean, this is there are some downsides. One of the downsides is it's not a case, really. It will close, and it's got the magnetic latch and all of that, but it's not going to protect the outside. It's like a laptop. The screen is protected in the sense that it's face down against the keyboard, but it's good enough for me, and also I can just carry this in my smart cover with me, and then I only bring this out when I want to do
writing. I love it. It has backlit keys, which I think is really cool.
Full backlit keys.
I need that in a laptop.
The only complaint I would say about it is that it has traded the escape key for the home key, and I find myself hitting escape all the time because you can hit escape on an external keyboard to get out of menus, and it doesn't have an escape key.
It's
got the full row of function keys, so you can control its own keyboard backlighting, the iPad's backlighting, bring up the keyboard or dismiss it, media keys, volume, the works.
So it's really purpose-built for the iPad. It's an iPad keyboard.
It is. It will only fit.
No trackpad.
In this case, the 12.9. They have one for the 9.7 as well. Although for the 9.7, I really like, which I also brought today.
Oh, well, it's accessory day,
It is accessory day. 9.7, I like the Logitech Create. I think this is...
It's not as bad on that one. It was really bulky.
It's much less bulky. It's a completely different design from the 12.9 and much less bulky, this one. And the keys are a little bit small. But I could type full speed on it, and I like this one a lot. It's very light. It's fairly easy to snap it in and out. It's got a little place for the Apple Pencil.
I like it has a pencil holder. I think that's great.
So for the 9.7 iPad Pro, I prefer this.
Yeah.
And this one actually uses the smart connector. The Bridge is a Bluetooth keyboard, so you do need to occasionally charge it. It gets a lot of life, even with the backlighting on. It gets a lot of battery life, but you do need to charge it separately. It doesn't power itself because it's a Bluetooth keyboard. But for the 12.9, this is my favorite so far. I guess my only other caveat would be that the first one they sent me didn't work.
Oh.
And I wrote to them, and I just bought it as a regular person. It wasn't a review unit for the press or anything. And the support was great. They were very apologetic, and they said they would replace it immediately, and they sent me a new one before I had even sent my old one back. So I've got to give the caveat that they had a production quality problem, and that's, you know, yeah. your mileage may vary. You may have to watch out for that if you buy one of these. But they also took care of it, which I like. The customer service was good.
This is the Logitech Create, but you don't recommend it for the 12.9. It's just for the 9.4.
The designs are totally different, and the 12.9 is very bulky. The 9.7 is
not so bad.
Is great. I use
the 9.7. I use Apple's own keyboard. And actually, I at first thought, if I didn't even buy it, I bought the Logitech Create, and I bought a couple other ones. But I, as silly as this is, it's not a case. You know, that's the smart keyboard. It falls off at all sorts of inopportune moments. However, I think as a keyboard, I really like it.
Now, it's really good.
It surprised me. It's small keys, so the keycaps aren't great.
Yeah, I can type full speed on it. What I find is that I need to orient myself a little bit. Like every now and then I need to look down and see where my fingers are and make sure they're on the right keys. But once I do that, I can go pretty well on it. And, you know, all of the 9.7 iPad accessories are better than the 12.9s just because they're less bulky.
Yeah.
Because the surface area of the screen is so much less.
So huge. Yeah.
And that translates into weight and bulk. And so, yeah, that smart keyboard is way better than the one on the 12.9, even though they're the same,
right?
Because it's so much lighter.
Yeah. I've been very happy with this. It does have the disadvantage of only one angle. Your bridge is nice because you can have a variety of angles on the
keyboard. It's just like a laptop. You can bend it to whatever viewing angle you want it to be on. That's so much nicer.
I brought an accessory. I know you have a couple more.
Yeah,
can I interrupt with one of mine?
The more the merrier. This is accessory day, Leo.
This is hysterical. Annie Anatko told us about this.
Oh, you got it.
I got it. Yeah, this is from a company called Elago, E-L-A-G-O. And it is a very special stand for your Apple Watch. It's an old iMac. And you see what I've done is that you take the charger.
Original Mac.
Yeah. Not iMac. Mac.
Yeah.
At 512 or maybe even the original 128 Mac. You see, you put the cable from your Apple Watch and the little thing in there, and then watch what happens. I'll take off my Apple Watch. It would be even better if, and I do this, I in the morning because I work out, I use the rubber band, so the sport band, and then I put on a little dressier band for work. So when I go to bed at night, it is kind of like this. It'll still work with the band. You don't have to use the band. And now it's... Now, how do I get it in night mode?
It's got to be plugged in. The charger has to be
plugged in. Oh, okay. So as soon as let's see. I need to find a USB port, John. I know what I could put it into. My laptop has a USB port. So I've been very fancy, and I zip-tied this up. Now I can't get it off. Let me get the zip tie off.
That'll teach you.
You notice that this cable is a little bit gnawed. I think you can see how gnawed it is. When we had when Hamilton was a kitty... He loved cables.
My cat is obsessed with iPhone cables, too.
There's something about that soft rubber that Apple uses that makes it very appealing.
Yeah, so he keeps wanting to rub all over my iPad when it's charging.
Let me plug
this
in.
Thereby knocking it over onto the floor. It's perfect.
And I think this will have enough juice to... And I guess I have to unlock it, huh?
No, you shouldn't have to. When it goes into night... what do they call the alarm clock?
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Nightstand mode. So now... Isn't that cool?
Aww,
I'm going to put that on my nightstand.
It's so cute.
It's a soft silicone rubber, not very expensive. It's under $30. Now you could, and it just wouldn't look as good. You could absolutely leave the watch band.
Basically,
on.
Basically, your bands just stretch onto the left and the right
it
side.
It just kind of sticks out.
Apple needs to make a beige sport band that matches that case.
and by the way, if you had the round band, it would go around it too. So it'll work with any of the Apple bands, no problem at all. And then there it is, a nightstand. I mean, that's the cutest little nightstand. Your little Mac 128 Mac nightstand.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
They really did a nice job. They didn't put the little Apple here, which they probably couldn't do.
Yeah.
But... I think I love this. This is my new favorite Apple Watch.
And what does this cost? This is
$30, under $30. It's just still.
I think I saw it for like $15 on Amazon.
It might even be
too,
cheaper, because it's just silicone rubber.
Yeah.
Molded rubber.
But very clever.
Doesn't that look good? I love that. What time is it? Oh, I don't know. Let me check my Mac. They were so much smaller back then. Yeah,
they were.
I know.
I think somebody has even hacked it to run like a Mac emulator. That would
this?
Be pretty hilarious.
Oh, the yeah, watch.
The Apple Watch.
Oh,
right?
That would be so good.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I could put Doom in there. What else do you have?
Let's see. So I've got the Osmo Mobile from DJI.
I'm so jealous. I want this so bad.
It is great.
So this is what we call a gimbal.
It is a gimbal.
You put your iPhone
in
there.
I'm going to put my iPhone in here. You slide it in, make sure it's balanced.
And this is really only for shooting video. There's no advantage to this.
I think you could argue that it's for photography, too.
Okay.
Because you can do time lapses, and it makes in low light situations, it's going to make the...
It's more stable. So, yeah. And this is with all gimbals, what Jason's doing is unfortunately a prerequisite for all gables, which is once you put the thing in, you have to balance it so that it kind of has weighted right.
So
I'm surprised, actually, you have to do that because your iPhone's not changing its weight. Maybe the distribution is different depending on how you slide it in, huh?
Yeah, I think that may be maybe it. Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm doing it the wrong way.
And,
and it's supposed to be for anything. So it'll work with an Android phone. It'll work for an iPhone 7
got
Plus. It'll work for any kind of device. So you gotta balance it. You
it's
get
not
used
balanced,
to it.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I am doing a terrible job of it balancing it on
well, you're kind of there you
on
go.
The show. There.
So now, this is active. In other words, you charge it up.
Yes.
And it has inside it accelerometers. Oh.
Yeah, see?
Oh.
And now it's moving.
So you could shoot a video and be running, and it would stabilize it, is the idea, right?
Yeah, that's the idea, is that it's like a, let me see if I can, maybe if we move to the other camera, we can, all right, let's see.
I don't know if we can see it. There we go.
Ooh, there's Leo. And as I move it, and even if I kind of jostle it like
this. It's a Steadicam. Oh, wow, look at that.
It is a Steadicam. It's going to keep on...
Can you? Does it extend? That. Can you?
So this, you would add
turn
an extender. You
stick?
Would add an extender to it, so you would actually kind of stick it on the end a little bit. And it comes with its own app.
It.
You want to grab?
It's not heavy.
It's not
I
heavy. It's very. It
to be
it's
much
very light. And then there's a little joystick on it that'll control record or to
What's
take
this?
Stills. And then you
What's
can also
trigger
pan.
For?
The trigger, if you double, just, it moves into some different modes. So
So okay.
it actually has three different modes. There's a upside down mode, a flashlight mode, and a straight on mode. So if you turn it upside down and double tap on that, it'll do.
Isn't that amazing?
It'll do something different. But the end result is, if you're shooting video on an iPhone or really any phone that fits in there,
right?
You get the Steadicam effect. Plus, it'll do.
How is it? Is it pretty good?
It's really good.
Yeah.
And it'll do time-lapse photography, too. So with pans. In fact, if you put it on its little base and say, I want you to pan from over here to over there over the course of 10 minutes.
Oh.
It'll do one of those sort of fancy pan time-lapses.
Oh, it's like a slider. Those are really
cool. It'll do it.
So those you spend a lot of money for.
And so all of a sudden, you've got a 4K video camera with Steadicam.
Oh, now I'm really jealous.
That you can just take with you. I mean, take it with you on your vacation or shoot your commercial for your local, business or whatever you want to do. I make videos for Six Colors with this.
Do you?
I do. I just started making them. I don't make that many yet, but I love it. I made one using the gimbal, and it's great. I'm never going back to not using the gimbal.
All right.
Every time you take a product shot, and it's like it's all shaky.
Yeah.
It's like handshake is gone. It's all super smooth.
Yeah, really smooth. How much?
Again, I am really bad with prices.
This is where I'm going to be sad because I know this is going to cost... I'm going to guess. I bought a gimbal for my camera that was $800.
This is $300.
Not bad.
For what it is, it's not bad. It's one of those things where you're like, whoa, I'm never going to buy a camera accessory for my iPhone for $300. Fair enough. But for what it does, it's actually a pretty cheap way to get that full-on Steadicam kind of effect.
And the iPhone does such good video.
Right?
You tie it this to it, you really have a great... situation.
And if you think about panning and stuff, the idea that instead of moving your arm to make that pan and have it be a little jerky, instead you just hold it still and you use the joystick to pan and it'll do that. See?
Oh.
So
it's pretty
cool.
Ooh.
Right? I mean, it's just all smooth, right? It is.
That is really neat.
So this is the kind of hardware you'd find in a high-end camera, except the mount is just this thing you slide any smartphone into.
And this is from DJI, who do the great Phantom drones.
Exactly.
And this is the same technology, I presume, that they offer.
I assume this is all of a kind. And,
yeah.
And so it's got a Bluetooth connection to your phone, which is what allows you to control it kind of like a selfie stick.
Okay.
And it comes with its own app, which lets you do some of the special effects.
So I press the video button, and now I'm recording.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at that.
Hey.
There's Jason Snell.
That's right. Smooth
star
as silk.
Of Why is it looking down?
Why are you panning down?
I'm sorry. This is awesome. I'm, you know what?
Are you tempted?
I'm very tempted. Yeah. How long does it take to charge, and how long does a charge last for?
Charge lasts for many hours. So this is like the upside down mode. You can actually see now. I can shoot like this.
Why would you
this.
Shoot that way? Just because it's
sometimes.
Easy.
Well, I on my vacation, I did some stuff low to the ground.
Down. Yeah, like if you got a skateboarder.
Exactly.
Oh, that's cool.
And then you can also do this flashlight mode where it's sort of like you carry it like this, or you can go back into the normal kind of mode, which is like this.
See, now you could buy a camcorder for $300 or less, half that. But this is if you've already got the iPhone, you've already got really a very good video recording capability plus internet access and all that stuff on the thing. This might really turn it into a real video production. Studio. That's really cool.
Back in the day, you would have bought a self-contained camera that did the sort of thing, or a dedicated camera. And now you might as well just use your phone. This is brilliant. And the best part, when I get a new phone next year, fits fine.
So it's just a standard, like I could use in my Android or any other phone.
It is literally just a clamp.
Yeah. That's why you need to rebalance it. Now I understand. If you always use the iPhone in exactly the same position, exactly the same way, it wouldn't have to be rebalanced. But when you put a new phone, a different weight, different distribution.
And for something like an iPhone, and the iPhone 7 that I have is relatively light, but it will work with much larger, much heavier phones. So like an iPhone 7 Plus, actually change the difference on the arm.
It'll fit in there.
It'll fit in here.
Oh, I am going to get – I have to get this.
See, I have to unscrew that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it'll do this, and then I can actually change. There's this arm also is adjustable to get it out, because what you want to do is find the balance point for it. But it'll work with, so basically any phone up to a very large, I think basically any modern smartphone or phablet will fit. So as small ones.
The DJI from DJI, the Osmo Mobile, Osmo $300 Mobile. Available online.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Are there other gimbals out there? I would figure DJI is probably the best.
I don't know. This is the one that I had referred to me many times, and I'm pretty happy with it. It's pretty great.
Now, we don't talk enough about it because there's 100 cases in the world, but I'm just curious if you have a case that you like to use for your iPhone.
I generally don't use an iPhone case.
Notice. I'm going bareback too. Even though we both have the Jet Black.
The Jet Black is made to be run without a case. Not only does it look good, but unlike the iPhone 6 and 6S, I never feel like this one's going to slide out of my hand like a bar of soap. It is tackier. No. It does have loads of fingerprints on it, but I don't care. I just love it.
It's so beautiful. I hate to put something this gorgeous in a case.
I agree.
But Apple warned you, and everybody has also, the hairline scratches. That gives it the patina of wear.
I used to have a leather case on my 6 and 6S, and leather, it's all about the wear, and it doesn't matter.
It's not like you get big gouges. You just get these little fine lines, mostly at the edges, I guess, where I'm sliding into my pocket or something. That doesn't bother me. And it's still generally, I've had it for a whole 4 months now, it still generally looks pretty good.
I do have one case that I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
Now, this one is old, although they still sell it on Amazon. This is for the iPhone 5, although in here is an iPhone SE. This is the Survivor Catalyst case. Oh. It's fully waterproof.
Oh, I love that.
So I took this. In fact, I've got the shot right behind it there. I took this picture of a sea turtle under the water in Hawaii on this phone with this case. It's got rubber gaskets all around it and O-rings. It's got if you're not on an iPhone SE or have an old iPhone 5 that you can put in a case like this. They make other cases like this. There are lots of waterproof cases out there. I think the most important thing is to make sure that they're rated for the depth that you're planning on going down. And what I found out is they need to have this special module in the space where the camera is, because what you want is the camera to be clear.
Right.
And this one was. And then my only other piece of advice would be follow the instructions, because they will probably tell you to put it together and submerge it without a phone in it to make sure that it actually works before you drown your phone. But when all was said and done, this, when we went to Hawaii, this was the travel photograph phone. We would take this in, even if we weren't going to submerge it in water. This is the one we took in the waves. It comes with a wristband, and you actually can hear the sound. It's got a little conductive thing to get some speaker sound out of this waterproof case anyway. It's got a little dial to turn it to silent mode. They've thought of sort of everything here, but in the end, you open the camera app, put it in still photo mode, and then just sit there and click the physical button underwater. But it works great, and so I recommend anybody who is planning on doing, especially like snorkeling or something like that, look into getting an iPhone case. And if you've got an older iPhone, if you're afraid, but you've got an older iPhone laying around, you know, put it in airplane mode and use it as your camera, knowing that if there is a disaster, you'll be okay. But
now you don't need it for the new iPhones, right?
So it turns out you do.
Because Jason Calacanis yesterday was saying, and I love my iPhone 7 because I would just, in the pool, I would take pictures under the water of my daughter.
You know, it's rated to do that. It is rated to have 30 minutes at up to, I forget what it is, 10 meters or something like that. Yeah. However, our good friend, Serenity Caldwell, who works at iMore, she did this in Florida and took her fiance's phone and took it into a swimming pool. And one of its seals failed and it died. And they took it to the Apple store and Apple said, it's rated to be submerged in water, but the warranty doesn't cover water damage. And they had to pay
to get it replaced. Oh, that's good to know.
So what I'd say
is, it takes your chances.
The reason they're marketing it as splash-proof is exactly this, which is it's rated that way so that accidental exposure won't destroy the phone.
Right.
But they're not guaranteeing that it won't die if you put it in the pool.
So you probably should still get a case.
I would say if you're worried about going in the water, you are taking your phone into your own hands if you put it in the pool. It might work, but if it fails, you are at fault, unfortunately.
Ooh, that's not good.
No.
That's a good tip.
Yeah, well,
I should call Jason.
Thank you to Serenity
for
destroying her fiance's phone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. But I think for an older phone, it's great because you can get a case and it's a phone that's, if it dies, it's okay. And that's the kind of phone you take snorkeling with you.
I bet you a lot of people have their old iPhone lying around.
And at least for now, last time I checked, this iPhone 5 case is still available. And I put it in an SE, which is great because that's the really good camera. But if you have an old 5 or 5S, it would work too. And that might be a nice way to have your kind of vacation camera. If it dies, it's not the end of the world, but hopefully it won't die.
Well, according to the old clock in the Mac, it's time to take a little break. You can find links to all of the products that Jason and I have mentioned at our website, twit.tv/iOS, in our show notes. If you have some suggestions for something you'd like to see, a subject you'd like us to cover, send email. Oh, Siri's listening to everything I say now, huh? Send email.
This is a complicated command.
To iostoday@twit.tv. Or you can leave us a voicemail. You know the number? Everybody say it along with me. 757-504-IPAD-3. No, there's no 3. 757-504. We should make a jingle, though, so we can remember this. 757-504-IPAD. Here's what we'd like you to do, though. If you're going to email us a video or record a voicemail, start with your first name only, and city, and keep it to under 30 seconds so we can use it on the show because we love using audio on the show. Coming up, the latest news in the Apple world. Thank you, Jason Snell, for filling in for Megan Maroney. She's in Washington, D.C. this week, having a great time with her daughter, Annabelle, in the Women's March. Our show today brought to you by, the Ring Video Doorbell. I think this is my single favorite IoT device. It's a doorbell you replace your existing ding-donger with. It's actually easy to do. I'm no handyman, but I did that. There's two little screws. I took it off. There's two wires coming out of the door. You set it up. The Ring doorbell, actually, it's much nicer. It has a plate, mounting plate with terminals. And they even give you drill bits if you need them. And they give you, in the kit, they give you a level so you can make sure it's done beautifully. They have a variety of finishes for a variety of home styles. We use the, what is it called? I think it's burnished bronze. Looks great. And it looks like a normal doorbell. It's even got a light-up ring so somebody can find it at night. But here's the secret. That has also a camera, motion sensors, a speaker, and a microphone on it. So if somebody comes up my steps, even if they don't ring the doorbell, I know. I get a notification on my smartphone. It's connected to my Wi-Fi. And if they press the doorbell, I can answer it from anywhere in the world and say, hey, yeah, I'm in the shower. Just leave that package right here. And then I can keep an eye on the package. Of course, if it's a bad guy, I could say, yeah, I'll be right out there with my Doberman. Hang on a moment. And usually that's sufficient to just get them down the road a piece to the next guy who doesn't have a Ring Video Doorbell. I've got some great deals for you with their Ring of Security kits. Right now, if you go to ring.com/iOS today, you could choose from a variety of kits. They all the kits include the Ring Video Doorbell. You can get the Pro or the original. We have the original, which has a battery in it. So that can be used in a situation where you don't have a wired doorbell. The Pro is much slimmer and it has a 1080p camera as opposed to 720p. Either one works great. I love them both. You'll also get the really nice solar panel-based security sign to let people know you're keeping an eye on things. If there is the kits can also include the stick-up cam, which is basically a Ring Video Doorbell without the doorbell. It's got the camera. It's got the speaker, the microphone. It gives you a chance to keep an eye on the house from other angles, you know, maybe the back door. And it never – you don't have to worry about it plugging into the wall because it comes – with a solar panel that gives it enough juice, charges during the day to run all night. It's even got night vision. Both of them do. They keep an eye on things even if it's pitch dark out there. There's also, if you want it, the chime. You can plug that in into any power outlet. It becomes part of your doorbell system in the house. So there's a part of the house, you know, your workshop where you can't hear the doorbell ring. Put a chime in there. Pair it to your Wi-Fi and you're set. I love the Ring system, and I want you to check it out. Pick your favorite and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. Ring.com/iOS today. Ring.com/iOS today. Get your Ring of Security kit. All right. Let's see here. We've got some news of the world here. A couple of things I wanted to mention real quickly. Not specifically iOS, but I thought kind of interesting. Sprint just announced that it bought 1/3 of Jay-Z's Tidal service. Tidal has been a struggling service because they're competing against Apple Music and Spotify and Pandora and everybody else in the world, Google and Amazon. But they have some artist exclusives. That's Jay-Z's relationship with those artists. They also, don't they do high-res music as well?
Yeah, I think they say they've got a lossless streaming option.
Which would be really cool because then you're essentially listening to a CD.
Right.
You're not listening to something that's compressed. And if you have a good sound system and you have enough bandwidth, that would be really good. So we were, frankly, a little worried about these smaller music companies because they're competing against big boys who don't have to make the entire profit on the service. Apple could lose money on Apple Music, but it will still do it because it's valuable to sell phones. And Amazon and Google probably don't have to make money on their music services. But Tidal does, Spotify does, and I worry about these. And Tidal was kind of the smallest of the bunch and got in a little bit of trouble recently. They were reporting, you know, publicly 3 million subscribers. They paid royalties for 852,000 subscribers. So they don't have a huge subscriber base, even though they might say they do. Anyway, they will be around now. With Sprint's investment, it also might make you interested in getting your next iPhone from Sprint because I'm guessing, and I think Sprint intends to offer it at low cost or free to Sprint customers.
It's an interesting idea. It is tough. It is a tough space to compete in, right?
It's very tough.
And I'm not convinced. I think the problem, and I've been a skeptic of people talking about high-quality music, not that I can't hear on certain bit rates that this is an issue, but like Neil Young's whole thing about his high-resolution audio that I think most people would believe is if you did an A-B test, nobody would be able to tell the difference. This is a little different in that it's uncompressed audio, but I think when the average consumer probably couldn't tell the difference between a 128K MP3 and a CD, and certainly can't tell the difference between modern 256 variable bit rate AAC files or even MP3 files and uncompressed. That's not a great differentiator for them. I wonder if at some point they will back off of that and say, you know, what it's really about is it's a great service with some great exclusives thanks to Jay-Z's relationships. And, you know, the fact is you don't even have to buy the uncompressed version. They've got a lower cost version, a $9.95 a month version that is just standard bit rates, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's an interesting gimmick, but I'm not sure it's a gimmick that most consumers care about at all.
Other news, Meitu, M-E-I-T-U, an application designed to turn you into an anime character.
Into a Sparkle Pony, yes.
Sparkle Pony. It's a Chinese app, and it is available on iOS as well as Android. People are recommending against it because it's a little easier to see this in Android because Android asks you for permissions up front. iOS only asks you for permissions as the app uses it. But it's sending back all sorts of information to the Chinese company that runs it, that made it, including whether your phone's jailbroken. Why would they need to know that? Including your phone number, the ability to make calls and take calls, And the thing that I think worried most security experts, the IMEI and others information about your phone that identifies you uniquely. Probably in most cases when you see this, and a lot of apps do it, it's for advertising. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people who are a little concerned that it's sending it. And so you might want to think twice before installing MyTwo.
Yeah, it turns out that the Android version does a lot more than the iOS version, mostly because the iOS version would
won't let them.
Yeah, they would be caught by Apple's scanners, right, and they wouldn't be allowed to do that. But I think this is a useful thing in just reminding people that there, it is allowable for apps to collect information about you through analytics packages. And many, if not most, app developers use analytics packages.
Right.
And these analytics packages, hi, Leo, they radio back home and they say, what device am I using and when did they click that button? And any information that is allowed for them to collect, they can collect and send back to home base. And so people should be aware of that, that, you know, it's not using an app is not like you're on an island. Your apps can radio home with data, and it's been that way for a very long time now.
And sometimes you're giving them more data than you even know, although you would get warned, I guess. I don't know if
I think for some app, I mean, basic app analytics, there's no warning. They're just hitting a server.
I don't know if this is it. This is called MyTwo. I'm taking the bullet so you don't have to. I don't think you're missing anything. It's just another one of those filter apps, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. No big deal. I'm going to erase this right now.
Yeah.
Other big story that broke as we went to press. I always wanted to say that.
Stop the presses.
We don't have any presses. iOS updates. And nowadays when Apple does iOS updates, they update the whole range of stuff. Your watch, your TV, your phone, your iPad are all going to get 10.2.1 today. Thank goodness Jason Snell is here. He can tell us what's new in the update.
Security improvements.
That's what it says. And then if you go and you say, oh.
And there's a link.
Yeah, let's follow this link and see. Well, for more information on the security improvements, is this? No, that was another one.
That's, yeah, so the security improvements post tends to follow the release by a few hours.
Okay.
So they will do a security detail.
Here it is. January 23rd, that's today, right? Auto unlock, available for iPhone 5 and later, may unlock when Apple Watch is off the user's wrist. So this is for the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
You don't want that, right? That's a logic issue addressed through improved state management. Contacts. Processing a maliciously crafted contact card may lead to unexpected application termination. And we all know what that leads to. Teen pregnancy.
Sudden death.
No, it's in fact, the first step in an exploit is to get the system to crash. As soon as a hacker sees, oh, I can crash the system, then the next step is to say, all right, instead of crashing it, let's see if we can jump to some malicious code. So you always want to fix those. There's some kernel updates, arbitrary code with kernel privileges. This is a fairly large security update. Yeah. 69 megabytes on my iPad.
And I'm telling you, these third dot releases, like 10.2.1, the best advice is run the update because these are security issues. They are closing security bugs, and oftentimes these are all kind of orchestrated with the disclosure of their existence.
Right.
Which means that once they announce it, then the hackers know that these exist if they didn't know before. And so, you know, protect yourself and do the update.
Yeah. There, a lot of the WebKit stuff could be very bad. WebKit is what's used to do Safari, but also any application that displays a view of of HTML in the web. And a lot of these arbitrary code execution.
Yeah, there's a bug in here that will present the home screen on an activation locked device, which is dangerous because if somebody steals your phone, they might be able to get to your home screen.
Not good.
No.
So download and install at 10.2.1. It's 67.4 megabytes on my iPhone 7 Plus. It's a small update. It's not huge.
Yeah.
Shouldn't take you too long. I'll do it on my phone right now and see what happens.
All right.
See, and we'll know.
This is what people tune in for, by the way, is the pulse pounding.
It's always fun to watch.
No one
that.
Will be seated during the iOS update scene.
He's so brave. Oh. I admire his guts. Hey, I just installed MyTwo. That was probably a real act of bravery.
This is true.
The case for the 10.5 iPad Pro. We have heard rumors.
Right.
That I think it's is it safe to say that this spring should see new iPad announcements?
I think everybody's expecting new iPads this spring, and maybe an iOS update with some new iPad features. One of the things that iOS 10 didn't do was add iPad features to the OS. It felt very much like Apple focused on the iPhone, and the rumors are, there's been rumblings that the idea was then the iPad stuff would be added in another update in the spring, which makes a lot of sense if that's what we get. So that's the question. Are we going to get this spring some new hardware and some new software? And then there was this rumor that's been kicking around for about 9 months now that is from fairly reliable sources that said there will be a new iPad Pro size, and it's 10.5.
Something in between your giant 12.9 and my relatively small 9.7.
Yeah. And so there was this question of why would you do one in the middle there?
Right.
So that was a big question.
So you wrote an article saying, no, this is a good idea.
I think it is a good idea. And what prompted me was Dan Provost from Studio Neat wrote a blog post on Medium basically saying, why would this happen? And Dan did the math. And the math explains everything. Because if you think about what I've got here, the 12.9-inch iPad Pro, its screen resolution is the same as two iPad Airs next to each other.
Two iPad Airs
next to each other.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
So what Dan did was the math of what would the iPad Mini, which has a higher screen resolution, it's got the same number of pixels
as a
regular iPad, but in a smaller space. Huh. What would the size of that screen be if you made a device
iPad
capable
Mini.
Of the iPad Mini side by side? Oh. And the answer is 10.48 inches diagonal,
okay,
which is what this rumor is. And so Dan's theory there is, this is where this is coming from. They're going to release an iPad that has the resolution of the 12.9, which is really nice. You can run two full-size iPad apps side by side. Kind of hard to do on the smaller display. It's one of the things I love about the big iPad. But in a device that is slightly larger or perhaps even the same size.
If you eliminate
bezels. Believe
it
or not, 10.5 diagonal will fit
right
in the footprint of the 9.7-inch iPad if the bezels get really small.
Do you have a tape measure? I'd like to just prove that point. So
Dan,
I think this would
amazing.
Be the sweet spot,
he just
actually.
Cut a piece of paper and just laid it on and all of that.
I think that would be amazing.
Right?
I think
right?
That's just the size. This is too big for me.
This is too big, but that screen is too small. And so I've opted to cave on one, and you've opted
so
to cave on the
feel
other.
Like the 12.9 is maybe heavier than you want.
It's heavy and big, but I love the screen too much to give it up. But would I give it up for something more like that size, but with all the pixels of this one? Yeah, I think I would.
10.4?
10.5, let's say.
No, 10.478.
Yeah, something like that.
And it's measured diagonal.
Diagonal.
All right.
And so you've got to put it in the 4x3
aspect
ratio. It
would just fit. I mean, it would just fit. If I put this in the corner, it just... Yeah, you know what? Modern devices, and we have heard rumors that the next iPhone might be a bezel-less device. Modern devices could be bezel-less.
So what if Apple's first sort of very light bezel display was that?
Oh, I would buy that in a heartbeat.
Right, so same size as that, or maybe slightly larger, but basically the same size with a bigger screen and the pixels of the 12.9.
I would buy that in a heartbeat.
Right?
I think
it's a really interesting idea. The question is what happens to that one? And I kind of feel
the Mini. What happens to the Mini?
No, I think the Mini's just going to keep kicking around. It's small and light. Yeah. The Mini and the Air, I think, will both kick around.
I use a Mini at home.
I wonder,
that's a good size.
I wonder if the 9.7 Pro would go away in that scenario because it gets replaced.
What do you need this for if it's the same size?
If it's the same size.
Just put a bigger screen on it.
It's either
I think
that
this
or
makes
they,
sense.
Yeah, right?
I'm voting for this.
So this is the thing. Is the initial rumor didn't make any sense. And then I listen to Dan's math and I start to think about it. And I end up in this place where I'm like, no, actually, I'm really into the idea of an iPad Pro that's basically the size of the small iPad Pro with all the pixels of the big iPad Pro. That is a pretty great combination.
You've won me over. I would have poo-pooed it.
I know. Well, it didn't seem... On its face, it seems ridiculous.
Dan's right, though.
You got to kind of like back out of it to wonder, what is the source of this rumor? Why would they go down that road? And I think that's the reason. So I hope they do it, because if it's the exact same size, all of the accessories will come along with it, too.
It makes a lot of sense.
Would be nice.
Would it? Could I use this keyboard, or do I have to get a new keyboard?
If it's exactly the same size, I would imagine you would use it. But that's the question. Will they make it exactly the same size?
And put the Pogo pins for the special connector
on
there?
It's a Pro, so they'd have the smart connector on there. It wouldn't surprise me if they make it slightly different, so you have to buy all new accessories, because, you know, it's Apple. This happens.
Apple.
And if it was slightly wider, the keys could get a little bit bigger on the keyboards,
right,
which might actually be, for somebody like me who uses these external keyboards, a slightly kind of longer iPad so that the keyboard can be a little bit bigger. That's a kind of a win. to me.
One of the things I worry about, though, with these new bezel-less designs, both on the iPhone, presumed iPhone 8 or 10 or X or whatever they're
still got to hold them with your fingers, right?
Where do you put your hands? And yeah. I actually don't mind the fairly wide ears on the current iPad because I have somewhere to hold it without touching the screen. If there's no, I mean, do I have to hold it like this?
I think on the iPhone, you know, the idea that you're kind of cradling it like this makes sense, but the iPad doesn't follow, right?
Yeah, so I don't need to touch the screen.
I think ultimately the iPad is going to have the two big bezel sides.
Right.
The other two sides, I'm not sure if the bezel needs to be there.
Unless you use it in portrait mode. But even then.
Yeah, but even then you're probably holding it by the bottom. Yeah.
You could.
Or you're grabbing it by the sides.
So maybe it'll be slightly larger, but not a full size 10.5.
Possibly, yeah. Right? Yeah. Right. And you know, I'm sure they'll do some like finger rejection stuff on the sides so that it tries to let you, you know, you can hold it without ruining everything. But I don't know. We'll see. But I've turned around on this one. I feel like maybe I'm starting to get excited about the idea of this model. So now I want it to exist. I want a smaller iPad Pro that's got all the pixels of my big iPad Pro.
Does
I want
Apple
that.
Throw out the non-Pro iPads? Are they going to go all Pro?
I don't think so. I think that, I mean, Apple's in this Tim Cook era, what we have is Apple likes to keep cheaper products around, but rather than create original cheap products, most of the time what they do is just take an old product and let it kind of die, gracefully,
SE.
Right? The iPhone SE is a little, it's sort of the exception to the rule in the sense that there's some new tech
new
in there.
Yeah.
And that may be the long run where the iPad Mini and the
update
iPad
the
Air
Mini,
go.
But keep it a non-Pro.
Yeah, they'll keep using kind of semi-old technology and not updating it every year, but keep it around for a good price. That's how they get, you know, the entry-level product. The top-of-the-line stuff is not going to be priced to move, but the old model will still be there.
Well, I think you're right. Now that you've explained it this way, I think we'll see. And we'll see this around
Welcome
March.
To my world.
I think you've
world
won me
of
over.
The 10.5 iPad.
The 10.5 in March. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can. We're on the website twit.tv, and it's twit.tv/iOS. You find links there to all the various apps you could subscribe to, your podcast app. Of course, we're on YouTube Live now. I love this. It's youtube.com/twit. You can watch us live there and subscribe to iOS Today on one of the YouTube channels. If you want to send a video question, I mentioned this before, I'll say it again. Make it 30 seconds or less, first name and city, and send it to Megan@twit.tv or iOSToday@twit.tv. We have got some emails. Would you like to answer some questions?
I would love it.
Whenever I get Jason in here, he's really the expert. Huh. So whenever I get Jason here, we give him the tough questions.
Yeah, I know. And then I shrug and go, oh, no.
that's my job. Ooh. You can't do that. Rick writes, I was recently in Europe with my Apple Watch. I didn't need any of the functions of the Apple Watch. Well, just time. I wanted to be a watch. Can I expect more battery life if I turn off the Bluetooth connection? Would this work?
Yeah, so the number one thing you can do is just put it in airplane mode. If you put it in airplane mode, it is just a watch, and it will use less battery because the radios are off.
Right.
So that's step one. If you want to go long, also don't turn on your activity stuff because the activity sensors use a lot. So don't start a workout, and it'll last a lot longer.
Yeah.
If you're really desperate for maximum battery life, you should hold down the button until it brings up. Is it not there? It's not in there. I don't want to do emergency SOS.
Is there a button to say?
How is it?
Because I
put it in
like,
standby mode.
Like I'm not,
do you remember?
Like the sip, don't slurp mode.
Oh.
Whoa. You just did something.
I almost did the SOS mode.
Oh, my God. Your mom's going to come in
a
minute.
Oh, my goodness.
Are you okay, Jason?
Well, there's a low power mode that you can also put it into.
But it's not.
I'm not trying to figure out how you get there.
I have got to tell you. The watch change. So, for instance, a number of people have pointed out to us.
Oh, that's it.
That your AirPods battery life will show up in the watch, but it's only sometimes.
Yeah, it's got to be. I think connected. Okay, so here's what you do if you really want to save. Yeah. You flip up to the there we go. You can see it.
Look closer because it's blurry.
Flip up to your control center.
Yeah.
Tap on the battery percentage.
Yeah.
And then tap power reserve.
Ah.
And when you go into power reserve, it's irrevocable. You will have to tell it to proceed. And what will happen is that's all you get. It's now in this super low power reserve.
You don't get any choice of face or anything.
All it will do is give you the time, but it will do that for a very long time. Right. So you've got options. Airplane mode is the start, and then power reserve if you don't care.
I have to say, with the Series 2 watch, even if I work out an hour a day, I don't have ever any battery life. I'm usually 70% when I get home.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, it sips the battery now.
Series 2 is a much completely better. Different animal. Yeah.
Thanks, Rick. Jack Spencer, Louisville, Kentucky says, iOS, no, you're not going to have an answer for this, but I'll throw it at you anyway.
That's okay. I'm worried that the cops are coming, so just stay cool, man. Stay cool.
Did you really? Is that an SOS?
Actually, I've never done that before. It counts down. It does a 3-2-1, so you can be like, no, and you just back out of it. So
or,
that's good.
Or the crooks can say, no, he didn't mean that.
Just break his hand.
Yeah. Jack Spencer from Louisville says, iOS 9 had a trash all option on my email box. Oh, this is mail for iOS 9. They upgraded to 10. No, it's not there. I have to check every email one by one that I want to trash on iOS 10. No more trash all. Why is that option gone?
Well, you know, I love these questions that
there
say,
is no why.
Why?
Do not ask why.
Why? Because Apple looked at the stats and said, nobody uses this feature.
Isn't that funny?
But they decided to take it out. You can still select items and then trash them, but there's no trash all item anymore. That's why. Why does Apple? Why you don't, know? Why does the sun
no
shine?
Why
does
no
the
why.
Rain fall?
Yeah, you can't ask Apple. Does Apple? Now I know Microsoft does this with Windows. They call it telemetry, and they know what apps you've launched. They know how often you use something. They know how much time you spend in it, and that's very useful for them. That was the excuse when Microsoft killed Windows Media Center. They said, "Well, we know that only something like 5% of all Windows users use it. And in most cases, like 50 or 60% of those people close it immediately like they opened it by accident. So we know there's a very few people who actually use Windows Media Center. Apple doesn't have that kind of telemetry,
Apple
or do they?
Apple has some of it, yeah. Apple does.
They do.
They have the, when you start up a Mac, I know that it says, like, can I send information to Apple?
Oh, that's that box.
And you get one of those, I think, on the iOS startup
to
as well.
To improve our products
exactly
and services,
right. So
we
can
would like to send some
information
back.
You can opt out,
you
can turn it out. And I don't think they're, like, spying on everything you do, but I do think between that and maybe some focus, you know, not focus group, but some information where they do a study and they actually opt in a bunch of devices and try to see how they use the system.
Right.
They get information.
They know.
The challenge is, from the outside, we can't tell whether they're making decisions based on facts or based on whim, unless they say.
That's their own fault, because didn't Steve Jobs always say, oh, well, we never use focus groups?
Right.
See, I don't buy it. I bet they do use focus groups.
I don't know if they use focus groups, but I am pretty sure they use stats of how their users are using their
products,
right?
You'd be crazy to be a modern technology company and not bring in users and look at them through a one-way mirror while they use your product.
That's true. Microsoft always excelled at that, right?
Yeah, you have to do that.
Yeah, just to see how they behave, because ultimately what you want to know is how do your users behave, not what your users say they want, but what they do
and
how they behave.
Do they look at a control or a button or an icon and understand it and use it?
Yeah,
and
that's user testing. That's not quite
a
focus group.
I think that's the fudge word.
But it's a little bit different.
And I can see Steve, you know, Steve, I know better than everybody.
Yeah, right.
I know this stuff. You don't have to ask
it's
somebody.
It's that opinionated kind of thing.
But I think that's the old way. I'm sure Tim Cook doesn't feel that way.
So I don't know whether Apple looked at, the mail team looked at this and said, oh, trash all. Do we know if anybody uses that? Oh, yeah, we got some stats here. Oh, nobody uses that feature. Well, let's get rid of it. Or whether they were just sketching up a new UI idea that needed space down there, because they did make some changes down there, and said, well, we can get rid of this, right? Sure, let's just get rid of it. That's what we don't know,
It seems backwards. You know, for a long time, you had to delete notifications day by day. You know, you have to go back through the days to delete your notifications on your iPhone. And I just love it when they added, and it's a force touch feature, but they added the ability in iOS 10 to force touch the top of the notifications, the little X window, and it gives you a pop-up that says clear them all, and I say yes. That to me, and maybe I'm nuts, I bet you don't clear notifications on your phone.
I do occasionally, but it's pretty
rare.
Most
people just go, it's going to roll off after a week, so you don't need to do that. One last, this is from Rick. We were talking about China and the Great Firewall of China. He writes, he's in China. Every foreigner, we were talking really about how, in my opinion, and I'd been told this when I was in China, the Chinese government isn't so much worried about the elites, the educated, using VPNs and other techniques to get to Twitter and Facebook. They're worried more about the people. They don't want a mass rebellion on their hands. So they don't go after people, the elites who use VPNs. And Rick kind of confirms that. Every foreigner here I know uses a VPN. Also, most of my students who are probably considered elite use VPNs. A lot of them even use Facebook. I don't think there's any risk of prosecution. Twitter is blocked here, yet Chinese media and the government comments on, for instance, Donald Trump's tweets, ironically. Leo's right about the CNN blackouts. I was mentioning I was watching CNN in China, and it just went black for 3 minutes while they did a story that the Chinese government didn't want Chinese people to see. And then it came back. No, nothing. No slides saying we'll be right back. Technical difficulty. Just went black. And he said, yep, that's what they do. I don't mind Apple caving into the demands of the Chinese government because it keeps access to Apple services free. I still can use FaceTime and iMessage. And my email address is my iMessage if you need a quick response. Thank you, Rick. It's good to know, to talk to somebody in China who has some direct experience with what it's like. And that was my sense as well, is that the people know how to get around these restrictions. And the Chinese government isn't particularly concerned about those people. So if you want to email us, we'd love to hear from you. Email iostoday@twit.tv. And as I mentioned before, don't forget that number. You can call and leave a voicemail, 757-504-IPAD. We're going to get our hats on.
All right.
In a moment. You can put it on now if you really want.
I'm going to wait. never prematurely enhatten yourself.
No enhatten until it's time.
Yeah.
We will wear no hat before it's time. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. You geeks, you thank you. Because Quicken Loans is one of the largest mortgage lenders in the country, one of the most loved. Just look at their J.D. Power Awards year after year after year. They really do a great job. And they're very digital, very smart. They realize there's a group of people who don't want to get a home loan the old-fashioned way. Now, there's plenty of people who still want to go to a mortgage broker, boxes of papers in hand. They like that personal touch, but not us geeks, right? That's the last thing we want to do. We want to do it from our couch, on our phone, or on our tablet, or on our computer. And that's what Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans is all about. They've reinvented the mortgage process to put the power in your hands. It's, of course, trustworthy. A mortgage lender that works with your best interests in mind and helps you personalize your loan. There's sliders. You can adjust the length and the rate of your loan in real time. Make sure you get the mortgage solution that's just right for you. Also, this is a quick process. The last mortgage I got, we thought it would take, it couldn't possibly take more than 2 weeks to get a loan when we bought our house. It took so long. We ended up going on a cruise and we were still faxing papers in while we were on the boat. Believe me. This is the future, and this is how I'm getting my next loan. Whether you're buying a house or refining, go to quickenloans.com/iOS today. It's fast, it's easy, it's totally transparent from one of the best lenders in the world. quickenloans.com/iOS today. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. They're in Detroit. Did you know that?
I did know that.
He is the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Is his name Gilbert? The guy who owns Quicken Loans.
That's why they have the Quicken Loans Arena.
It's in Quicken Loans Arena. And we were talking about, with Jason Calacanis, who knows him, about Quicken Loans in Detroit. And they bought much of the blighted urban center, and they're renovating it, and they're leasing it out to high-tech companies. They're really trying to turn it into a new high-tech center, which is great because I love Detroit. Greektown and the downtown, the waterfront. I just think it's a great city, and I'm so glad to hear that. There's some people who live there who really care about it, and they're trying to bring it back. All right, get that. Tell me the story of your hat.
All right.
Because you have a really good hat. This is a Viking hat with fur.
I got to slide down here so people can even see it.
It's really a good hat, and it actually is more than just a funny hat.
It's a symbol of my office because I'm on the board of directors of National Novel Writing Month, and every member of the NaNoWriMo board receives a Viking helmet to wear when we vote on things.
That is nice. It even has your name rubber stamped on the front.
Absolutely. Well, I don't want to wear someone else's Viking helmet.
It's personalized.
That's no good.
NaNoWriMo is a wonderful group. I didn't know you were the chairman.
I am for this year, yeah.
But I know a number of people. Tom Merritt used to do it every November. You have to write 50,000 words, write daily. The idea is to write a novel, but you don't have to finish it. You just have to write 50,000 words.
Just reach 50. You win if you reach 50,000 words by the end of November 30th.
It's so cool. And you do this every year.
Yeah, I haven't done it the last few because I've got three novels written and I don't want to write any more until I rewrite those. So now I'm in the rewriting and
was it hard? Because how many, what is that, 1,500 words
1,600 a day? Words. It was hard if I spent all day writing like long articles for Macworld or
right,
something.
You're and writing
I,
anyway.
I would come home and then be like, more writing. But it's a challenge, but it's totally doable. I mean, it's a little bit like saying, I say it's like climbing a mountain or running a marathon, but I think in terms of the difficulty, it's more like going from couch to five. To a 5K or something like that, where it's like, really, if you put your mind to it and you train, or in this case, and you just write every day for those 30 days, you can do it. And I think
makes you a better writer, I bet.
I think it makes you a better writer. I think it makes you think differently about creativity, about your personal connection to creativity, yeah. about how stories are told. You start. I don't read books the same way that I did before because now I see a little bit about like tricks authors use to move the plots along and things like that that I didn't really ever think of before I had to do it myself. So it's great. I really recommend it. And we've got a great program called the Young Writers Program that provides materials for teachers in mostly in high schools and middle schools to teach creative writing to nice. Their class. And they do a sort of mini version of NaNoWriMo in class.
NaNoWriMo.
Yes.
And is it and NaNoWriMo
.org?
.org. By the way, just to go full circle, I have now downloaded 10.2.1, installed it.
Oh, beautiful.
What's nice, it did not require me to re-enter my iCloud password. I hate those updates. That's a big pain in the butt. But those are not usually the .. update.
Right.
So far, so good.
What's your hat? Oh, look at you.
I thought I'd match.
You have so many hats.
This is kind of like the Tin Woodsman from The Wizard of Oz with actual cow horns attached.
We look normal.
My daughter brought this back from Mexico. I do believe these are Coke cans, actually, hammered out. Anyway, there's a reason why we're wearing horns. What is that reason? It's time for our app cap, where neither of these are caps, but it rhymes, so we're going to call them app caps, where we pick out our application of the week, and I'm dying to hear what you have.
I have Songshift.
Songshift.
Songshift. It's free. With in-app purchase, there's a 99-cent unlock, and there's a $3, I think, is the most you spend. And what does Songshift do? You know, one of the biggest kinds of lock-in for online music services is if you go from one music service to another, you lose your playlists.
Oh, I hate that.
So here's what Songshift
does. Does save them?
Log in to your music services of choice. It supports Tidal, YouTube, Spotify, Last.fm, Hype Machine, Discogs, Deezer, and Apple Music. So your faved tracks, your love tracks from Last.fm, a playlist from Spotify you want on Apple Music, or the other way around. A friend of mine, Tim Goodman, who used to be the TV critic of The Chronicle, is now the Hollywood Reporter. I do a podcast with him.
Oh.
I do podcasts with everybody.
Do you do a cord cutting podcast?
No, we do. Do we just talk about TV?
Reviews?
TV Talk Machine.
I love Tim Goodman.
So,
I used to read him for years.
So he used to be a music critic. He's got a lot of opinions about music, and he made this amazing, like, 10-hour-long, great holiday music playlist.
Yeah.
On Spotify.
Yeah.
And I'm an Apple Music subscriber.
Right.
And I thought, what am I going to do? Am I going to sign up to Spotify for a month just to listen to his playlist? And then I thought, oh, I can spend $3 on the in-app purchase in Songshift Pro, pick his playlist, and choose transfer to Apple Music. And all of a sudden, well, after about a minute or two of it cranking away, I had a new Apple Music playlist with his songs. And it does some smart matching. It found about 95% of his songs. There were like 5 or 6 that it couldn't find because they're not on the service. But it tries really hard to do some matches because the metadata isn't always exactly the same.
Right.
But the result is pretty amazing. So if you are migrating, if you're thinking of moving from one service to another, the way it works, you just log into your service, authorize Songshift, and then it does the rest of the work. You say, this playlist, copy it here. It provides you a preview. You can say, yes, you know, that looks good, or no, I need to change a few things. There's really not a lot to it. It just kind of does it. So if you are sad that you're going to lose your playlist, but you want to move to Spotify from Apple Music, let's say, you can do it.
Solves a huge problem.
Yeah, if you go to Tidal because you think Sprint is for you,
yeah,
take your Spotify playlist with you.
I've left playlists all around. Very sad.
And you can try it out for free, and then there are the in-app purchases to get you kind of to take the ads away and get you Spotify import or just unlock everything.
Juan Carlos Perez is called Songshift, and it's in the App Store.
Yeah.
iOS, iPhone or iPad.
iPhone or iPad.
Good. Mine is iPhone only, but it's an interesting idea. We interviewed the creator of this a week ago on Triangulation. Jordan Ritter is the one of the founders of Napster, and his newest company is called Atlas Recall. I don't know if you've seen this. Mm-hmm. It's Mac and iOS only right now, but eventually will cover all your devices, all your operating systems. What it does is it runs in the background on your computer and remembers sites you go to, messages you read, all the stuff you do. It keeps in its memory so that you can quickly search through it. Now, this must have happened to you all the time. It happens to me all the time. Oh, I remember there was some app, or oh, I read an article about, and you just can't remember it, and your browser history is not enough. This is fast and easy and is really effective, and it's totally free. And, of course, I asked him about the privacy issues. He said, no. First of all, he's a hacker. He goes way back to WooWoo and Napster. This guy does not want to give any information to the federal government. The data is encrypted in place and encrypted in transit. You are getting the beta. That's why they're not charging for it. Mm-hmm. But I run this on all my Macs and on my iOS devices. And so everything I've done, it remembers, and I can search for. And you can even search in kind of a sophisticated way. So these are all the things, web pages, documents, email messages, chat messages. He's a big IRC user. Photos, videos, something else or everything. You can give it time frames. You can search by topic or keyword. So if you kind of remember something, but you don't remember when you use it or where you saw it, this is the way to do it. It's indexing your life, I guess, is the best way to think of it.
How does that work? I'm trying to figure out how that works.
It doesn't, I was...
Is it like running a proxy or something and looking at your networking?
I should have asked Jordan that. I have no idea. He's a very sophisticated guy, so I'm sure it's pretty sophisticated
just
stuff.
Just trying to think of how what
they have
how it
browser
gets
plugins. So all right. Safari and Chrome have browser plugins, not on iOS, but on the desktop. So that's how it's seeing your browsing. But you're right. How does it see my chat messages?
On iOS,
it sees my text messages. I'm not sure it sees stuff on iOS.
Oh, it sees stuff on the Mac.
It's on the Mac, but I can see it on iOS.
I see. Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah. I think it's a little harder to do on iOS. Android versions and Windows versions come. Well, at least Windows is close. They have a beta of that. Android, I'm not sure when they're going to have that. And it's a first step to something they want to call, they want to do a platform. They want third parties to integrate into it.
Sure, that makes sense.
Give them hooks. So you want to, if you're using, Excel, and you want to make sure that all the data in your Excel spreadsheet becomes part of the Atlas database. So I love the idea. It's kind of this fast search of all the stuff
you do.
It's
your personal search engine for
your
data.
It's your personal search engine.
That's a smart idea.
Yeah.
Smart idea.
And he says, the NSA and Google already have all this. We should have access to this, right?
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
That's encouraging.
But he's right, I think. You'll find it on the web at atlas.co. It's Atlas Recall, and it's free, so I like that. Well, that's it for this fine edition of iOS Today.
So soon.
The Viking edition.
Yeah.
Jason Snell is at sixcolors.com. Go there now and read and keep up on everything going on
in the
world of Apple. And then, of course, he's got all his podcasts. Are they linked from Six Colors?
Yeah, you can click on podcasts on Six Colors and you can see them all.
So many good ones. And he joins us as often as we can get him because we love having him.
I'm just down the road.
So nice
happy to
be
here.
Thank you for being here. Megan will be back next week. We do this show every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. No, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. If you want to stop by, we'd love to see you. Thanks for joining us. And we're not going to throw these hats.
No.
Really? You want to catch it?
No, we're going to take the whole show and put it in a boat and set it on fire and push it off into the river.
Valhalla!
It's a Viking funeral.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on iOS Today. Bye-bye. We're off to Valhalla. Look at that. Leaves a mark. I wouldn't believe. Oh, that left a mark.